It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded on the 15th of April, 2024. And in the pod with me this time is Dave Whitmer. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Barry. Glad to be here.
I've been doing sort of a mini series within the Barry Pod of people who the main question I want to ask of is, what makes you tick? And I get to that question in my mind when I see somebody who's engaged, involved, and that's just part of who they are. And we have some friends in common that I've had in the pod who fit that category. And so you've been on my list for a while. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
So what is the thing that makes you tick?
You know, it's a interesting thing, Barry. I was raised in a family where I knew I was loved from the very early part. And I don't take that for granted at all. My mother and father taught us what love was. And I have three older sisters, all living here in town. We're still all very close. And the reality is, we were raised to be good neighbors, to be a part of a community, to think beyond ourselves and what would benefit us personally, and to do things with our friends, neighbors, and community that would make a difference. I was fortunate to graduate from college with a degree in biology. And then of course, like everybody, you look around, you go, okay, what do I do with that, right? You know, and there were some choices I had to make. But interestingly enough, a job opened up at the Napa County Agriculture Department for an agricultural biologist one, and I applied. That was in 1980. I was hired in January of 1981. And I spent 33 years with the same department in the county. The last 20, I was the agricultural commissioner and also the sealer of weights and measures. And I, you know, my whole career was about helping this community in whatever ways I could. And being in agriculture, one of the greatest things was to try and protect this industry from a lot of different things, some, you know, naturally occurring, some invasive, some land use issues, you know, those kinds of things, but maintain a strong agricultural economy because it was kind of the basis. And then the things that I'm doing today, Barry, are things that I'm passionate about. I'm involved with the Napa Valley grape growers. I'm on their board of directors. I'm on the board of directors of the Napa Valley Farm Worker Foundation. I'm on the board of directors of the Napa Valley Community Foundation. I get to work with those wonderful people, and I have just been blessed. So in my way of thinking, when you're blessed and you know it and you are loved, it gives you the freedom and the flexibility then to love others and to do things for other people.
It's a great answer to the question. It's best yet, if anybody have asked that question. Starting from a place of love, that's really something.
Yeah.
Born and raised here?
Yeah.
Family, many generations?
No, my mother and father actually, both, my mother was from Kansas. My father was, raised in Indiana. They came out during World War II. My dad got a job as a naval architect at Mare Island and was in submarine design. And my mom was a registered nurse. And so she actually, when World War II started, she joined the Army to serve as a registered nurse in the Army and was stationed in San Francisco out at Angel Island, which was a receiving hospital for folks coming in from the wars. And she saw an awful lot of action in that place. And then my mom and dad, you know, first started, they got married, they lived in Vallejo first, and then they began to look around, and they came up here in the early 1950s, purchased a home and had their family. And that's how the Whitmers got started in the Napa Valley.
And you went to local schools?
Product of local schools, as they say. Yeah. West Park Elementary, Redwood Middle School, Napa High School, Napa Valley College, and then off to, you know, four-year institutions to get a degree.
Where did you get that degree?
Well, I started at Long Beach State because I thought I was going to go in the medical profession, and they had a physical therapy program that I was interested in. I got involved with that a little bit and decided that I didn't want to do that. And I made a transfer from Long Beach State up to Chico. And so I finished up my degree in Chico and, you know, got a degree in biology. Man, it served me well working with in the ag department and with all of the stuff that we were doing. I was mostly, I guess, plant science, but I also had quite a bit of zoology and animal science as well. So, you know, all the insect stuff that I had to do while I was ag commissioner and, you know, some of the other projects, I was well served by the education that I got at all those institutions. Mm. And, you know, being a product of local schools, I'm no authority on education, but I sure got a good one.
You know, I'm glad you said that. My kids are local public school products and have just done fabulously well in their lives. And,
absolutely.
People who attack public education and the teachers this and the administration that, they haven't spent much time around those classrooms.
Yeah.
Or they would have a different attitude.
Well, I agree with that. And I think, you know, it's interesting. It seems to me that a lot of people think they're an expert in education because they went to school once. But, you know, the reality is there's a lot more to it.
Yeah. So talking about all that plant biology and so on leads me to a bunch of different questions. In your time as ag commissioner, what was the biggest, scariest problem that you had to confront?
Yeah, it was actually two things that come to readily to mind. The first was glassy-winged sharpshooter. It's an insect that spreads a disease, a bacterial disease called Pierce's disease. And, you know, the reality is that at the time, this is the late 1990s, early 2000s, we had a tremendous problem with Pierce's disease in certain locations, particularly those around riparian areas and or ornamental gardens. What there was a vector of the bacterial disease called a blue-green sharpshooter that wasn't it didn't spread it very far. It transmitted the disease, and if you had both the disease and the blue-green sharpshooter, it wasn't a good combination for farmers, and folks were experiencing significant losses. But what came on the scene was this larger, I guess you'd call it more robust, sharpshooter insect called the glassy-winged sharpshooter. It was found in Southern California. It had arrived there probably on ornamental nursery stock, and it had spread. And the scary thing about glassy-winged sharpshooter was that it could literally make it uneconomical to grow grapes in Napa County. And if you think about those economic dominoes start to fall, and it affects everybody here. So I had to come up with a way to prevent an insect from coming from other areas of California and the other areas of the United States into Napa County, and do so in a way that kept business thriving, that worked well with counterpart industries in Southern California. The nursery industry is no small thing in LA and Ventura and, you know, some of those counties. So, you know, dealing with an insect like that took a real team approach and involving the industry at the beginning, and working with a lot of people over a lot of distance. I spent quite a bit of time in Washington, D.C., bringing resources to our local community to help us fight this. I spent time in Southern California working with nursery owners and ag commissioners in the southern part of the state, try and work on rules that would be workable for everybody. And at the end of the day, what it took was creating redundancies in the systems so that at every level every redundant level, you end up preventing this thing from coming forward and being here. And I'm really proud to say we're 22 four years, I guess. And we have never fought an infestation of glassing wing sharpshooter in Napa County, which is really a testament to the team that, that really worked on that program.
Is that success specifically because of the inspection program?
It's a treatment program. I mentioned the redundancies. We require the nursery at origin to treat that, that nursery stock or keep it free from glassing wing sharpshooter. And then we have they do an inspection program, another redundancy, to make sure that there isn't glassing wing sharpshooter on the shipment before it comes up here. Once it comes up here from an area like that, it gets inspected by the local ag department. And so focusing people to purchase plant material locally and not, you know, buy plant material from other areas was a big part of the campaign. We did a lot of public outreach and had a public outreach component of the program, which I'd never messed with before, but it was kind of fun. You know, we had taglines and I still have people that come up to me, I have this really cool magnet on my refrigerator for, you know, and there was all kind of tchotchkes that we, you know, we donated pencils that had the glassing wing sharpshooter message on them to the Napa Valley Unified School District. And we had, you know, things in the community that were really made it an interesting project. And then I guess the other project that I was thinking of when you asked the question was we had a problem in that became apparent in 2009 in the fall. We found European grapevine moth here in the county, and this is a pest of grapes. Just about anywhere in the world it's found. It originated in Italy, and over in Europe there's a every year, if you're going to produce wine grapes, table grapes, etc., you've got to treat for this this insect, right? So, first time it had ever been found in North America. So the typical folks that I would go to ask for just basic biological information are not there, and I've got to try and figure this thing out. So maybe you can tell I'm a relationship guy, but to me, everything happens because you form relationships with people. So through the Great Wine Capitals program that the Napa Valley Vintners had involved me in as ag commissioner, I had gotten to know the director of agriculture for the province of Florence in Italy. The gentleman's name is Gennaro Ghiliberti. I emailed Gennaro and I said, hey, I need your help. Who would you go to in your university system that could advise me on European grapevine moth? He gave me the name of an entomology professor at the University of Pisa, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Andrea Lucchi. Andrea and I have since become really good friends, he and his family and my family. And he helped us try and figure this thing out. Barry, when we trapped for European grapevine moth in the spring of 2010, we found over 100,000 moths in traps in just about every area of the county of Napa.
Wow.
And if you figure we're just attracting the males, because we're using a sexual attractant, pheromone, the males are attracted to the trap, then if the population is relatively 50-50 male to female, then there's 200,000 out there, right? So I'm the ag commissioner. I got to try and figure out how to deal with this thing. We are the only place in the world to announce eradication of the European grapevine moth ever. I mean, never been done before. And it was through a collaborative effort with folks from Italy and USDA, California Department of Food and Agriculture. My staff at the local ag department, we put together a program that was has been studied since as a model for how you eradicate an invasive species. And we did so, and I created an opportunity for organic producers to participate in the program and not lose their organic certification. That's a big deal. Nowhere in the world had anyone done anything like this. And we were successful.
And that was using a chemical?
We used the pheromone. And it's called mating disruption. I know us men are pretty confused about that subject anyway, right, Barry? But the reality is you put this this female pheromone out into the environment, and the males can't find the females. And so you end up disrupting the mating cycles. And if you get enough of it out there, and this was key to the program, was getting the local wine grape community to participate in the program, and for us to be able to get, they were like twist ties that you use on that we had hanging on the vine at a certain density. These slowly emitted this pheromone that only affects this specific species, right? And we ended up crashing the populations.
Wow. Yeah. Science.
Yeah. Yeah. And good science, right?
Right.
It was relying on relationships. I look back at it. There's a lot of people in the community, not a lot, but there's some in the community that challenge the Board of Supervisors every year because they go on these trips to these great wine capitals. Mm-hmm. Well, if you just talk about that one story, right, and how much money and chemical usage we've saved here and everything, would you say that the trip that I took with the vintners to the great wine capitals was worth it? Mm-hmm. In terms of building the relationship with Gennaro Ghiliberti and his help, a funny side note, I got an email from Gennaro and from Andrea, and they said, "Dude, what are you doing?" And I said, "What?" I had done an interview with the Wine Spectator, and they wanted to talk to me about European grapevine moth. And I gave credit to Gennaro and to Andrea Lucchi. And Andrea told me a story. He said, "Dave, I got called into the dean's office. I've never been into the dean's office before. My palms are sweating." And he says, the dean says, "I understand that you helped save the Napa Valley wine industry." You know, their press people had found this article where I'm quoted as saying that they were partially responsible. And he says, "Don't ever do that again. I don't like going to the dean." Here I am trying to give him some credit, you know. But no, it's all about relationships, Barry. Yeah,
that's a great story. If I remember right, when the Glassy Wing Sharpshooter problem surfaced, this campaign to keep it out was extremely important, because what the alternative would be if you couldn't keep it out, and there was talk about aerial spraying. Right.
Well,
I remember that correctly.
Yeah. Well,
fears
about
of
spraying.
It.
Yeah. Fears of what the big bad government would do.
Right.
And you know, so I said to people, I the last thing I want to do is spray chemicals in neighborhoods for this thing.
Because it wasn't limited to the vineyards, it's right. Living in the other plants.
It's all over
and
the
then
place.
Moving, so it's everywhere.
You know, to some extent, the viticultural industry, if they have a pest problem, they're going to work with the tools that they have to deal with that, right? But not everybody in an urban environment is going to take the same steps, and having a population of this out there that could, these things would fly up to a mile, and if they're flying up to a mile and spreading the bacteria, you know, as they feed along the way, man, this thing spreads pretty quick, right? Yeah. We put together a program, and I asked some people to come in and to evaluate the ways we could deal with Glassy Wing Sharpshooter without spraying. I wanted to know what with full range of options were. And, you know, thank God we never had to use chemicals in the urban environment. I don't To be honest with you, I don't know what we would have done. I think it, there were situations where people were so, felt so strongly, they said, I donate all of my ornamental landscape, right? You need to come in and strip my property of, rather than having you spray an insecticide. That was one of the options. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it was not so long after the medfly wars of, you know, that happened in the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. And there were situations where helicopters were used to spray malathion over, you know, over urban areas. Yeah. In San Jose and in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the technologies have changed since those times. But you couldn't get away with that today, right? And people still remembered that kind of government taking those actions and doing that kind of thing. And so they were concerned that, yeah, I was going to do that in the...
Well, it spins out of control, yeah, and you got to save the industry. Yep. You got to go to whatever steps you have to go to.
So a big piece of the program was a local public campaign to get the eyes of the community out looking for this thing. If we could catch it early, we could deal with it early, right? A lot of dealing with invasive pests is catching that infestation while it's still small enough you can manage it and deal and eradicate it. Mm-hmm. If you let it get too... go too long and too, yeah, well established, yeah, you just have a horrible time. That's why this idea of being able to eradicate European grapevine moth with that kind of population that existed here is still, I scratch my head and wonder if, you know, how we did it.
So you mentioned, of course, your time as ag commissioner. You mentioned the boards that you serve on. We haven't really talked about your work as a planning commissioner for the county.
Right.
How long have you been on that board now?
I've been on the Napa County Planning Commission since May of 2018.
Okay. In this current moment we're living in, because of seemingly unrelated things that are happening, I don't want to get into too much detail, but it's led people recently. There's one story, very tabloid style news story, that headlines that the environmentalists and the wine industry are at war with each other in Napa. That story, like I say, had a very tabloid feel to it. There was a lot of factual information, but the headline is what people read. I shared it with a friend who said, nope, that's not really what's going on, and a simple answer. But things have changed. And when I brought up the subject of spraying chemicals on, mm-hmm, ag, that's a good example. You said it wouldn't be tolerated today, mm-hmm, that kind of thing that was done in the past. From your unique perspective, from all the different issues that you've been involved in and are still involved in, have things fundamentally changed in terms of the future of vineyards and agriculture and wineries, since you deal with, as a plan commissioner, you're dealing with all of those things. Is the future more stasis than growth in this place that has grown so immensely since, mm-hmm, say, 1975 or 1980? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, Barry, it's a good question. It's interesting when you were formulating the question, giving some background on it. What immediately came to my mind was, nope, that's not what's happening. And I say that because what I see in the in our local industry is you can't disassociate the wine grape industry from environmentalists. There are so many people doing so many things that are protective of the environment and really caring for and taking care of the water, the soil, the land, and passionately about that. So I would say that most of the environmentalists I know are grape growers and people in the wine industry. I don't consider the term environmentalist to be a negative term. In these days of climate change, I think we have to rethink some of the things that we have often thought about some of these concepts. What I see is an industry that's committed to really doing the right thing with water, doing the right thing with how they farm their land, doing the right thing to prevent soil from moving off of their lands. And what we have from time to time are projects that come forward that I think test the limits, you know, kind of are working at the margins. Because let's face it, in Napa County, most of the places that it's easy to say, oh yeah, you can farm there, those are taken, right? And what I find interesting is if you do look at the history of Napa County and you look at the history of agriculture here, the wine industry in Napa County was thriving in the 1880s. There were, by some accounts, and I don't think they had nearly the kind of system that we have for identifying where acreage is and how much it is and all that, you know. So maybe the statistics aren't quite there. But they had as many acres of wine grapes as we have now.
Wow.
They weren't farming on the valley floor, Barry. You think about that.
Because so it was all still tree crops?
It was all wheat.
Still wheat.
And corn and grains.
Wow.
For, you know, and a lot of vegetables. The tree and fruit crops came in later, right? But a lot of this vineyard acreage was in the hillsides.
Which is the European model.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
It's where they mostly had come from.
Yep. And I'm not advocating that we go back to some of those methods and the methodology, because I'm sure that's where some of our problems have come from, is going into steep a location where soils aren't right for that. But all I'm trying to point out is there's a history here of farming in some of these areas. We have folks that are using the, what planners do is they receive a project from an applicant, and then they begin to look at that and compare it to what our book is, the, you know, the general plan of the county. But there's this overarching standard called CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, and it has to go through comparison. This project has to go through comparison to that general plan, and does it meet the general plan of the county? And then it has this CEQA process that can be very involved, up to and including the creation of a full environmental impact report, or at least the process helps identify those things that could be significant in terms of their effect on the environment, and then there are mitigations proposed to try and, you know, prevent the significant or reduce the significance of those issues. And I think there's a lot of difference of opinion about how CEQA is used, about what is significant, what is not significant. I think there's a lot of differences in opinion about some of the mitigations that are chosen to mitigate significance as it relates to CEQA. And I think we also have a more aware public, from the standpoint that if something's going in next door, folks have the opportunity to know about it, to learn about it a lot easier, to get information. They have we've created ways for people to communicate more readily about maybe an opposition to a project. Mm-hmm. So there are groups that form in opposition to all kinds of things, and as it relates to projects, and some of it is just kind of proximity and the issues of how much water is going to be used, where is it going to come from. Traffic is a huge issue, and we know that, you know, traffic in the valley at times is difficult. Mm-hmm. And we, to some extent, we're a product of our own success, Barry, right? I mean, people that are coming here, they know us for who we are and what we produce. And that's, it's hard to say that that's a bad thing. We've had a pretty good run here. But right now, we're, I think, as a planning commissioner, I take the approach that it's about balance. I look at projects and I think, how is it that we can keep in balance those things that we hold dear and the reasons that we love this place and still allow somebody to expand their business or to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that exist here. It's not about saying yes to every project. It's not about saying no to every project. It's about creating balance within.
That is a great spot at which to wrap up our conversation, although I feel like I could talk two more hours probably on so many subjects.
If you want me back, Barry, I'm willing to come back.
You certainly may get that invitation, so stand by. Dave Whitmer has been my guest in the Barry Pod, and thank you so much for doing it.
You're welcome, Barry.
Recorded on the 15th of April, 2024.
You're listening to the Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.